right, and welcome to another episode of Two Guys, One Level, a place where two guys talk about all things gaming. I'm your host, Tortuga, accompanied by Pixel.
And welcome back to another week. Actually been pretty hectic as far as news goes, so kind of excited to jump in with you guys and see what the deal is this week. So the summer generally is pretty lax as far as news goes. You usually see things more for either, you know, quarter one or quarter three, especially with the holiday announcements. But since we have been talking about the Microsoft Activision acquisition, we finally are heading to a close in that. So the FTC essentially dropped their case against Microsoft. So looks like the deal is set to go through. There are a couple other regulations in other countries that are still have to do their formal reviews. But even the CMA seems like they're going to agree to let the deal go through. You know, South Africa, South Korea have already, you know, send in their green lights. But a big thing is that even though the acquisition itself looks like it's going to go through, we're likely not going to hear anything official on it until about October.
Right. Yeah. So it's going to be a minute. You know, all these things take time. They have to then finalize the nuances of the agreement, figure out how leadership is going to work, how the operation itself is going to function after the acquisition, who's going to lead what and all this stuff. So there's a lot more that's going to go into it. But I'm glad to see that, you know, this is finally behind us and we have a result from this whole thing, because it was, I don't know, it was stupid to from the beginning. Had anyone presented an actual reason for the acquisition has to go through other than Sony not making enough sales on the PlayStation? That's not a reason to block an acquisition because a competitor is now making less money. That was a dumb argument, and I'm very surprised that it held up for so long. But the FTC even came out and said that there wasn't anything presented that actually holds a reason why Microsoft shouldn't have this acquisition. It didn't show signs of a monopoly. It didn't show signs that they would have more control in the gaming market. So I don't know. It was just a dumb battle from the start.
We have way too similar thought process. That's literally what I was gonna add on to your statement. Essentially, like if there was a genuine red flag as to why this is an issue, but it honestly boiled down to fanboys, the console wars, and Sony's special contract they had, which I think it was like 60-40 or something. But essentially, Sony had got a larger profit with a previous deal they got with Activision. So that's why they got a lot of season pass stuff, a lot of maps. Usually it was mainly a timed exclusive on Call of Duty, usually about a year or so. But yeah, the two companies have been facing extreme harsh regulatory scrutiny here in the US and the UK. But most other countries and regions, even in the EU, the merger was cleared. And the clearances that they got from these other regulatory bodies, they came without any other conditions. Like, they saw it and it was like an immediate, yeah, this seems legit. Like, I don't see what the big deal is.
Yeah. And I will say this, at least the CMA over in the UK tried to come up with an actual reason of why it shouldn't go through. They were worried that Microsoft was going to have a complete monopolized control in cloud gaming, specifically cloud gaming. That's where they wouldn't budge. They were so worried about cloud gaming and it being the future of gaming and Microsoft controlling all of it. But this acquisition wasn't going to change the fact that Microsoft already has 80% control of cloud gaming. Acquiring Call of Duty isn't changing that number. It's already at 80%. It's not going to go higher than that. It's not going to go lower than that. It remained at 80% even after the acquisition. It just means that, you know, because Microsoft is the lead currently in cloud gaming. They have the best infrastructure. They have the best setup for it. And so far, it's the only one that I've seen that actually worked. I've used it with the Xbox Live free to play, but the cloud gaming that comes with it. And it works pretty good. It saves you having to download a game onto your Xbox, and you were able to play online. And, you know, as long as it wasn't competitive, this was a story-based game. As long as it's not competitive, you're really not going to see that much of a hit through latency. Obviously, internet provider depending, but still. So it was just one of those things that we saw. They tried, they argued, and it kills me that the FTC, the lawyers at the FTC that were trying to put a stop to this, their argument literally was Sony is going to take a hit in sales on their PlayStation if this goes through. That was legitimately one of their arguments. I'm so glad we had a judge who literally looked at it and said, what the hell does that have to do with this acquisition? You know, it was so stupid. So I'm glad that got pushed through. And I'm going to throw this argument out. I've said it before. I'm going to say it again. If the PlayStation is so high and mighty, the sales should remain the same regardless of this acquisition. So,
yeah. And honestly, you know, Microsoft was offering the same deal that they gave to Nintendo, 10 years of Call of Duty. And I want to say they were moving away from the annual releases, which is also what ran Assassin's Creed to the ground. But they were getting off the same deal. And even after all it's kicking and screaming, Jim Ryan did accept a Call of Duty offer from Phil Spencer. So it's not like it's going anywhere. Like, honestly, I know corporations are going to corporate. It's all about their bottom line, their profit. But even at this standpoint, it looks like Xbox and Microsoft are still being pretty stand up about everything. That they're not being petty at all, because ultimately they want to make money. So, so whatever percentage of sales that they're going to put in that PlayStation contract, now that they're going to be the owners and the publishers from the Activision standpoint, Microsoft is still going to make money on this. Like, they're not spending, what is it, just under $70 billion, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
They're not spending it to lose it. Like, they're definitely going to want to recoup that money, or at least get that return on investment.
Right. So that is that. And just being in that we're speaking about Microsoft, they also announced a huge change to their Xbox Live ecosystem. So Xbox Live, that system in general, is going away, and they're moving over to what they're calling Xbox Game Pass Core. And from what I can tell, Core is a little bit cheaper than what Live was, but it doesn't have access to the entire library that we get currently see on Game Pass. They're saying that they'll have about 25 major titles accessible through Core, and it'll let you also run multiplayer, which is a big thing required to play on Xbox Live. But it's not going to be that entire library of indie games and you know, same day releases that you see, that we currently see with the Xbox Game Pass Ultimate.
Yeah, so there's a couple things. So we're essentially looking at four tiers, right? So like Tortuga mentioned, we do have Core. So that's online console multiplayer, 25 games, and then the same member deals and discounts that you're getting now. Then there's the console. The Core is $9.99. The console is $10.99, but you get access to the whole library, the day one first party games, and the same members of deal discounts. Then there's PC Game Pass, specific to the PC. Again, $9.99. That's the same thing. But that's now being, now including EA Play membership. So you're getting some additional games from that library. And then, of course, you have Game Pass Ultimate, which you get all the games you're getting now on console, PC, and cloud. The same first day, first party new games, member deals, discounts. Looks like there's going to be some additional perks, online console multiplayer, and then, of course, again, the EA Play membership. And that's actually going up to $16.99.
Yeah. So I think that's a dollar increase, if I'm not mistaken, from what it used to be. All starting on September 14th of 2023. So, I mean, Microsoft made this change forever ago. They've moved to subscription-based control, essentially, for everything when it comes to anything Microsoft. And it's they didn't do it only on the gaming side of it. It works the same with their Azure systems and anything Microsoft Office suite. You know, everything is all subscription-based now. So it's not surprising that this is the route that they're going. And I've said it before, they're going to try to control and dominate everything in gaming through these cloud services. And I guarantee you, all these, like the $69 billion acquisition has to be a play in order to get Xbox Game Pass on the PlayStation. I can't see that not being the ultimate goal, because it would break every PlayStation fanboy, probably even the Xbox, over if we got Xbox Game Pass on the PlayStation, which, by the way, you can do anyways through the browser on the PlayStation, which is still funny. But to have a dedicated application in that ecosystem would be hilarious. And I truly believe that's the ultimate goal.
And I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, they, like Tortuga mentioned, they did go ahead and pioneer the subscription-based services, starting with Microsoft Office. And it's a model that's been working for them. Yep. I mean, I am a big fan of just one-time purchases, right? Because a good version can last several versions that they re-release, right? But you know, this is just where we are now, fortunately. Enough on them. Gonna actually jump over to some quick Nintendo rumors, real quick. So while we're currently waiting for Metroid Prime 4, which I don't know if you guys remember, but did actually have to restart development back in 2019. And that's essentially the last thing that we heard on it. We ended up getting the Metroid Prime remastered a couple months ago. And now there are rumors that we actually have Metroid Prime 2 Echoes also being remastered. Take it with a grain of salt. Nothing confirmed yet. But this is actually coming from Jeff Grubb, who has definitely been an insider in the community, the game community, with leaks and things like this. So I personally think it holds some weight, especially since Nintendo has been bringing over and porting over games for quite a while now. But in other news, there is currently a rumor where we are getting a Red Dead 1 remaster that should be announced sometime in Q4, likely around the Game Awards, or probably looking at November or December. Remember, Red Dead 1 was only released on the PS3 and the 360, and it got a digital version on the Xbox One a couple years ago, I think like 2 or 3 years ago or so. It's much more closer to like an older Grand Theft Auto game, unlike Red Dead 2, which had a crazy amount of RPG elements and a much slower narrative in the game. But also just a rumor at this point.
It's one of those things. I wish that they would just stop with the remastering and just release another title in the franchise, right? And just leave the remastering alone, because it's when did R2 Red Dead Redemption 2 come out?
Late 2018, I think.
All right, so 5 years. So I guess we're not truly away, but we're within that window where another title announcement would make sense instead of going backwards. I don't know, but that's just me.
No, I hear you. So I actually had a similar discussion on something with my buddy Danny, and it essentially fell under the window. Like, we're getting what, 3-4 Assassin's Creed games, and there, like, we had the Ezio trilogy that came out. It came from the rumor that Ubisoft is setting to re-release Black Flag, very likely because of Skull and Bones, or remake Black Flag because it's like so loved. But it falls under that thing. It is. It very much is. Like, I hear you on that. I don't think Black Flag was a good Assassin's Creed game, but it was a good game. And I don't like pirates. They're really not my thing. But the ship battles were fun. You know, I cannot deny that for sure.
Word. Assassin's Creed pre-Sea of Thieves, I guess.
Exactly. And I really cannot knock the gameplay itself. I'm just not crazy about pirates. But the discussion we were having is usually in times of economic uncertainty, all these companies will absolutely take advantage of that nostalgia just because it's guaranteed income.
I mean, that is true. That's 100% true. And it can't cost as much. I know we were just bashing remastering, but it can't cost as much to re-release something as it is to develop something completely from scratch.
Exactly. Like, I mean, I don't know what technology they're going to be using here, but I'm sure it wouldn't be too difficult to grab old assets and maybe upscale it in whatever engine they're using.
Yeah, no, I see your point, and I can definitely agree to that. It's just, I hate that it's a tactic that's even being used, especially in the gaming industry. And I guess through all creative industries as a whole, a lot of things just feel stale at this point. It's hard to break through that, to create something fresh, create something new. And I just hate seeing these major beloved titles that we grew up with just being recirculated into this, you know, into the industry that we just want enjoyment from. I don't know. I'm waiting for something refreshing, which is probably why I keep begging and praying for Beyond Good and Evil 2, because we haven't had anything like it yet. The first taste of what I enjoy of Beyond Good and Evil 2 will come with Starfield. So in that sense, that's going to be nice and refreshing. And most likely why it'll be a day one purchase for me, just because of that aspect.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You are not wrong. And we see it all the time, especially in movies. You know, how many reboots have we seen? How many remakes have we seen? Like Ghostbusters. There's
only so many ways to save Christmas, man. I'm just saying.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, you know who's one of the biggest culprits for this is, I forgot who, Fox, 21st sure. Century Fox, whatever. Whoever owns the rights to Fantastic Four. So they have to make a Fantastic Four movie or they lose the rights. And that's why you've seen that reboot so many times.
That's so funny. That's pretty. I didn't know that they required to. I mean, it makes sense. I kind of like that. I wish they would do that for all IPs. Because it's stupid to hold on to an IP and just let it sit there. But yeah, no. It's like I said. It's across every creative industry because it's so hard. Content is being thrown out left and right. It's faster than it ever has in the history of humans existence. Right. There's more things coming out than we can consume. That we're just at that in history. So it's only going to get worse from here. There's going to be even more things in the future. And with the push of AI being able to handle majority of the lift, of the heavy lifting that it requires for all these creative industries, it's going to come at a speed that we didn't even think was possible. So I don't know. We're complaining about it now. AI is going to make things come back even faster. It's going to get staler even faster than before. Basically, right? Back in my day, we used to write our own game code. but anyways, so in an industry that I'm interested in, which is Blizzard and all things that they do, because, you know, sometimes they come out with cool stuff that make you want to continuously play month after month after month. And I'm talking about their biggest hitter, World of Warcraft. World of Warcraft for Blizzard is their bread and butter. If you mention Blizzard, one of the first titles anyone will think of is World of Warcraft. It's one of their earliest titles and IPs and things that made them who they are today to create the things that they've created all on the backs of World of Warcraft. Until recently, the release of Diablo 4 has actually made the numbers for World of Warcraft decrease, because a lot of their subscribers are still playing Diablo 4 after its release, and they're not renewing their World of Warcraft subscriptions due to the fact that they're playing majority of their time in gaming in Diablo 4. World of Warcraft currently has daily 1.2 million players worldwide playing World of Warcraft. Diablo 4, since its release, is hitting about 4.3 million daily players. So as you can see, it is the more favored of the two titles currently, and the numbers in World of Warcraft are taking a bit of a hit because of it. All the money is still going to Blizzard and all that good stuff, and you know, it's not like they're losing something from themselves and then also gaining something for themselves. But it's just funny that it's their own amazing game that's causing them to take a hit in another sector. And I just thought, you know, that was pretty fascinating to see happen.
That is pretty fascinating. Does it happen to break it down by platform?
No, not the data that I'm retrieving. It has everything combined of where it's available, but not which platform is seeing the most playthroughs.
Because I'm wondering, right, just because you mentioned World of Warcraft, I wonder if it's solely PC, because, right, World of Warcraft is only available there.
This data is from all available platforms. So anything on the Xbox Series X, the PS5, anything that Diablo 4 is available on, it's calculating all of that at the same time.
That's pretty insane, considering. I mean, when Tortuga mentions that World of Warcraft is their bread and butter, it is their bread and butter. Like, that is where their money comes in. That's why they're able to, you know, put games out like Diablo, like Overwatch. They're able to try out these new IPs because of all the money they have going in. I'm pretty sure if we were to go to Blizzard HQ, it'll look like the opening to DuckTales with Scrooge McDuck and all the gold coins.
Yeah, I feel like you're not wrong. And what's still interesting with this, World of Warcraft is still seeing a larger subscription than Diablo 4 is. I'm not sure how the subscription is being calculated. I'm guessing titles purchased, because Diablo 4 isn't a subscription-based game, unless I missed something. But
just the Battle Pass, to my knowledge, because, you know, they're doing it. I don't think it's new in Diablo. I know Diablo 3 had it, but they had like seasons. So we just hit season 1 in Diablo 4, and they do have some sort of Battle Pass.
So I'm wondering if this is where they're getting their subscription data from. Maybe it is the Battle Pass. I don't know if it's Battle Pass or sales of game, but World of Warcraft is seeing 127 million, more or less, active subscriptions still. And Diablo 4 is marked at 45 million. So World of Warcraft is still dominating in as far as subscriptions go, but active daily players, which is, I think, matters more than people who forgot to cancel their accounts. So it's just a pretty interesting thing that's going on within Blizzard. And I wonder if that changes how they prioritize things, if they're going to focus more on things in Diablo 4 to try to keep that number in the 3 or 4 million daily players, because that's a huge number. 4 million players playing your game every single day. And Diablo 4 is only about a month and a half ish old. And to still see these many concurrent players, returning players, it's huge. It's a huge feat for any gaming corporation. This is what anyone that makes a game wants, is people to come back and continue playing your game. So pretty cool. Good on you, Blizzard. It's cool to see something, not a sexual harassment.
Bruh. Okay. it's definitely a positive thing that they're getting that. But yeah, ultimately that's how games get that support. That's how they get their support. The larger player base, they want to keep pumping out content, keep them in there. And yeah, okay. Major news over at Microsoft. You definitely did. You definitely threw my whole train of thought off the tracks. So we do have some pretty major news over at Microsoft. Major Nelson is officially leaving Microsoft. For those of you who don't know, he's a big face for Microsoft. He did so many, he was kind of like the face of Xbox for a while. He's been with them for about 20 years. It is kind of interesting that he's leaving after this major victory against FTC. But you know, maybe he feels like that was his purpose, to be there to see that Microsoft's going to be in good hands, moving forward. I remember he ended up joining the Xbox division in like 2001. He was a senior product manager. He's responsible for so many parts of Xbox Live, how we use it, You know, he was actually one of the originators of the achievement system and party chats. So he kind of pioneered all of that during his time over there. And then, of course, his name, Major Nelson, was a reference to his gamer tag. So, you know, thanks for everything. Wish you nothing but the best. He did a lot of like videos and like game announcements kind of things. And he was always refreshing to see, because I feel like even though it was kind of like a persona and like all corporate, like it was definitely a face that you could relate to.
Yeah, no, you're right. But, and that was back in the time where we didn't really rely on YouTube for updates or things like that. It was Xbox had their own little thing, and Major Nelson would always pop up with something cool going on in the Xbox world. And this was back in the days where, you know, it was mostly PlayStation versus Xbox, right? And Major Nelson, I guess, was the lead frontier for all that. So it's definitely sad to see a huge name hang up their hat, but you know that it's the nature of the game. And it's interesting to even see this, because for all intents and purposes, Major Nelson was there from the beginning as far as Xbox is concerned. And to see him go means that he completely outlived an era, or I'm sorry, that the Xbox is going to outlive the era of Major Nelson, which is kind of crazy to see how that's going to continue forward without someone who was there from the very beginning. So, yeah, good stuff.
Word. What did you think of Pokemon Arceus?
I never played it. No, I never played it. It was during the time that I was not playing Pokemon. But from the little bits that I saw, it looked okay. It looked like, you know, Pokemon met Breath of the Wild. And it's so interesting seeing the gameplay now from Pokemon Arceus and seeing what we got with Scarlet and Violet, how similar those games were. So it definitely looked like Nintendo piloted the bones that they were going to put into Scarlet and Violet with Pokemon Arceus, just to see how it would feel and how it would be received. And then it turns out they took a lot of that free roaming element and added it and made it basically the entire display for Scarlet and Violet, which is a first for the Pokemon series outside from Arceus, because it wasn't, I don't consider it part of that, you know, red, blue, and silver, gold.
Like if it was more like an alternate. Yep. So the reason I mentioned it is because there is currently a rumor.
Right.
So there's currently a rumor that the next Pokemon game is going to be in that fashion once again, but taking place in the Unova region, which is Black and White. So there was essentially this famous Poke leaker who put out clues about, you know, what's potentially coming next. And they essentially said that upcoming DLC would tease the future. And they say in a mainline title, which I still think Arceus falls under that, even if we don't agree. Sure. But, you know, someone said that they ended up cracking the code of the leaker. And then they kind of quote tweeted them and basically said that Pokemon Legends was the past, Scarlet and Violet the present, and for 2024 that Unova is going to be like in the future. And this is all completely just rumors. Nothing has been no official statement from Nintendo on anything, but it looks like the next Pokemon title will take place in the Unova region, but in the future rather than the past.
I mean, that's interesting. I don't know. It's weird because it truly feels like they're just really trying to do the exact same thing they did with Zelda. It wasn't that Zelda's like whole thing. Some part of the story takes place in the past, some in the future. Now this is the present. And it like, it leads to this level of confusion. Or am I wrong in thinking that? Cause I'm not big into the Zelda franchise. I enjoyed what I got out of Ocarina and Breath of the Wild, but that is the extent of my like Zelda consumption.
Yeah, so the Zelda lore is like all over the place, but essentially you have games that technically fall in the past, you know, like Skyward Sword being one of my personal favorites. is chronologically in the timeline the very first game, whereas Tears of the Kingdom is the last one. So like any game from any standpoint can either be the past or present, right? Depending on how you're looking at that particular timeline. So like Skyward Sword would be the past to Ocarina of Time. But that's not what's happening with Pokemon here. Because the stories themselves, the Pokemon lore, sure, has some chronological elements to it, but really the games don't. The games, I feel, are really standalone. So I think it's more of the aesthetic of the actual game of how they're going to, you know, determine it. Because the most important thing as far as your Pokemon experience is going to be the region that you're in, right? Like I would love to take Scarlet and Violet and put me in the Kanto, the Johto region. I would buy that twice.
No, I get 100% of what you're saying, and it would be enjoyable to see them give that level of that style to all the regions that's ever been made, and maybe they will with this, you know, Blast from the Past concept that they did with Arceus, because I was looking at it, the Unova region was for Black and White, which is unfortunately when I started falling off with Pokemon. That is when things just starting to just not. I wasn't enjoying Pokemon as much as I did with Red, Blue, Gold, Silver. What was after that? Ruby, Sapphire, and then XY was also enjoyable. But Black and White, I stopped. I don't know. It was just downhill for me. And then Black and White 2, and then Sun and was god awful. I don't know why, how I could enjoy that.
I thought you loved it.
No, I hated it. Oops. It took, I bought the game day, every Pokemon game that ever comes out, I buy it day one, always. Because I love the franchise that much, and I will continue to support it. But I didn't beat Sun and Moon until 3 or 4 years after it came out, because I hated it so much, and I loathe it. It's the worst out of all of them, and people praise it so much. I hate it. It was awful. I'm sorry. I'm so glad they decided to not continue going that the way that they created that game. It was truly atrocious. But then Scarlet and Violet came out, and it renewed my love for the franchise all over again. So all is well and good, but it took a very long time to get back into that point. And I really hope that it continues. But I doubt that I'll give these like side adventures proper play. I never really do. I didn't do it with Pokemon Go, Eevee, and Pikachu, whatever that was. I didn't do it with Arceus. I likely went to whatever this rumored title will be. I usually tend to stick to the one that has two versions of the game. That, you know, I just pick one with the cooler cover. That's just how I do it. But being on the topic of Pokemon, they announced this a while back, and it's finally come to fruition. Their app called Pokemon Sleep is out, sort of. It depends where you are located in the world. Even in the US, they're not releasing the app entirely. They're doing it in like regions as well. But you can check the whatever your app store is called and see if Pokemon Sleep is available. It'll obviously let you know immediately if it's available in your region or not. And if you don't remember what Pokemon Sleep was, it is an app solely designed to track and measure your sleep. That's it. But they have some cool Pokemon elements kind of wrapped into it, where as you're sleeping, the app is catching Pokemon for you. And the better you rest, the better quality, I guess, Pokemon, or the rarer the Pokemon you catch are going to be. On top of that, you can also use the app during the day to kind of Tamagotchi style, take care of your Snorlax that comes with the app. You feed it, take care of it. And then the more you take care of your Snorlax, again, the better type of Pokemon you end up catching during your sleep. So it's one of those things that just go back and forth as you're catching Pokemon while you're sleeping. I don't know what the point of it is. I don't, you know, you catch Pokemon, they have a scoring system, and then what? It just sits there. I don't know if it's eventually going to tie into Pokemon Go. I'm assuming that's where it's going, if it's not already, where whatever you catch goes into the Pokemon Go, like your Pokedex, maybe. But I haven't seen anything of that being the case, so I don't fully understand the purpose of it, aside from tracking your sleep, which is important to do, but why through Pokemon? It's just to me.
So first off, they're probably doing it because money.
Sure, yeah, because it's free. So they're obviously selling that data to someone.
Bruh. And also, Insomniacs must be punching the air right now.
I can never be the best. I find it so, it's such a strange realm for them to jump into. Granted, Pokemon Go did a better job of masking the fact that they wanted people to be more active and walking around to catch Pokemon. But now they're doing the opposite, where you do nothing and catch Pokemon in your sleep. And like, the app is designed to like listen to see every time you move. And I think it even has access to like the gyroscope that's in your phone that determine if the phone is being moved. So I don't know how that's going to work if you're one of those people that leave it on your nightstand, but I guess if you leave it on your bed, it'll be more accurate. The whole thing's just weird to me, the way it's presented. And I'm very surprised that a lot of people are so well, are receiving this well. They're like, oh, I'm all for it. I can't wait to download this app, track my sleep, and catch Pokemon. There are already apps that do that. I don't, if you weren't into tracking your sleep before, why automatically catching Pokemon is going to make you want to track your sleep even more? It's just such a strange concept. And this is coming from someone who loves Pokemon. I literally just said that 5 minutes ago. This just seems weird.
I understand. I hear where you're coming from. Totally not gaming news, but the since there was a John Wick game, I'm going to go with it. The John Wick spinoff, The Continental, actually debuts in September. I think it's going to be like a three-part prequel. That's going to follow Winston.
Got it. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to give that a go. I forgot that we're hitting the largest amount of high-titled games released in a single quarter ever in the next 2 or 3 months. That was announced in June is about to come out within the coming weeks. For the next 24 weeks or so, it's just going to be nonstop great games.
Top of my head, we got Baldur's Gate next week-ish.
Yeah. Yes, I think you're right. You're off next week plus a couple days, but still.
Yeah, so in two episodes, we're probably going to turn into a Baldur's Gate podcast.
Welcome to the Baldur's Gate. Another episode of BG3.
It's
gonna be great.
We have the Witcher 3. The Witcher Season 3 is out. Spider-Man 2 trailer looks pretty good. Can't wait to get that on PC in 5 years. Rumored that High on Life potentially coming to PlayStation. What else do we have?
There were so many, I can't remember. A couple episodes back. But regardless, it is going to be just non-stop high-title game. Is this going to come out? Starfield's coming out in that window.
Do you have Starfield?
And that's another large game. I don't know how I'm going to balance that and Baldur's Gate 3. It's going to take a long time to complete both. I feel like this is what's going to happen. Baldur's Gate 3 is going to come out in a couple weeks, less than 2 weeks. And we're going to play that. And it's just going to be one of those games that I'm probably not really going to play on my own and advance the story when you play. Or I'll probably play on my own until Starfield comes out. And then when Starfield is out, it's single player anyways. And then that's just going to be my go-to downtime gaming. And then have some combined downtime, hit up Baldur's Gate 3 whenever we can to advance this. Because both games are going to be like a 100-hour plus games to complete. So it's going to take a very long time to complete titles. Years, in fact. I'm guessing.
Bro, the way that I've been playing, yeah. Like,
it's going to take three months to get through the tutorial.
It is insane. Absolutely insane. Like, there's so much more content I would love to do for the podcast. And there's just, like, time is non-existent.
No, I hear you. It's one of those things that I would love for the podcast to get to a point where we are actually approached and giving games to review and give our unbiased opinions on. Because I feel like that's one of the things that we hold true is unbiased opinions to the point where we can give actual review and not bought out reviews. Because so many reviewers will just say all the nice things of whatever product they're given in order to continue getting products. And I feel like we're still out to that point.
You know who's notorious for that? EA is notorious for that, of course.
Yes, it was IGN.
So who?
IGN.
No, I mean, but like EA, were their creators, their partners, whatever, if they don't give favorable reviews. I've seen it a lot.
They cut you off. Nintendo does that too. We just saw the other day. Nintendo, if you don't give them a favorable review, they cut you off. It's such bad practice. You know, people are allowed to not share the same opinion as you. It doesn't mean you cut them off. I think that's horrible practice, and it's completely unfair, and it skews all these reviews unfavorably because people out here trying to highlight something that is still important, but because it doesn't match the tune that they want to hear, they completely blacklist you for certain things. I think it's ridiculous. And, you know, that said, might be why we would never reach that point until we just change the way that we as people agree to accept information. But that's a whole different topic and not the design of this podcast. The design of this podcast is to talk about things like how... what's my... Oh, actually, I'm out of news.
Actually, I got two here, and then we can close this out. there's been a massive resurgence of game purchases, of Xbox 360 game purchases. Right now, 2009's Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 is currently the top paid game on Xbox. Well, why do you say that? Well, apparently, don't know how or why, it was pretty mysterious, but looks like Microsoft essentially ended up either fixing or restarting several Call of Duty matchmaking servers. So people are buying the older games to play those versions. We're talking about these games are currently outselling Red Dead Redemption 2, Hogwarts Legacy, Elden Ring, and even last year's Modern Warfare 2. So it's crazy how these old games are being played. Like right now, like as we're talking, those servers are up July 22nd. So if you are a Call of Duty fan, you can go and play it. Now, be warned, it is only on a Microsoft side. So I don't think the same thing happened on PlayStation. And on top of that, Blizzard announced that it has plans to release games on Steam, starting with Overwatch 2.
Got it. That's pretty cool. So they're going to do the same thing that EA or Origin did with Apex Legends.
Right. Yep.
Got it. Interesting. Well, that's cool. Because I do know, and I didn't bring it up earlier when I was talking about Blizzard stuff, the numbers for Overwatch 2 are steadily declining month after month.
It's a content thing.
Yeah, it's struggling. It's struggling to keep people's attention. And I don't think they can blame Diablo 4 for that decrease. It's just the way that they handled Overwatch 2 as a whole. Created an entire game of the same game with no changes in...
And promise changes completely. The whole reason for making Overwatch 2, the whole single player expansion, completely nixing it. The whole promise that brought people to Overwatch 2 without much kicking and screaming. And they just...
never mind.
Yeah. So yeah, I definitely can't blame World of Warcraft or Diablo 4 for that one. And I totally spaced, since you spaced on this earlier, on your Blizzard news, I totally spaced on my Rockstar news. Two minor pieces. Well, one minor piece, one major piece. So on top of Red Dead Redemption 1 getting that remaster, in that same window of Q4 2023, very likely under the Game Awards, it is rumored that we are going to get an announcement for GTA 6.
Yeah, and that's exciting. We definitely need more about it. Grand Theft Auto, beautiful franchise. It's such a fun. So I'm excited to see GTA 6. Hopefully it comes out right around the time we finish Baldur's Gate 3 and Starfield, and then we could just jump into that title.
Yeah, that'd be great. It will not come before 2024. That is for sure.
No, for sure. But I'm saying we're not going to be done till.
Oh no, I know. So, bro.
You think I'm joking?
Okay. All right. Good night. and that is going to be it for me on this.
And I did have one bit of news. I couldn't find it fast enough before my blunder. The dumbest thing I've ever seen, but I'm very curious to see why this is a thing. But ESL, a large CSGO esport league, has announced that they are 100% banning players from wearing Crocs. Those weird slippers with holes in them, players are not allowed to wear them to those events. And if they're caught wearing them, they are going to be fined $250.
Bro, what? Okay.
It's the randomest thing ever. But I found it so funny that I just wanted to bring it up. They're basically saying, I guess, that Crocs are considered open toe shoes, which are not allowed. Like, you can't wear flip-flops and sandals because your feet are exposed, and that's gross. So they're kind of lumping Crocs under that category of fashion, therefore bannable. under that little clause in there, their thingamajig. But it was just so weird to see Crocs show up under game news. But yeah, that's all I have. So stupid. But I mean, it kind of makes sense though. I don't want to smell people's feet, and I feel like Crocs don't really hide smell.
They do not. There's very likely going to be with all the additions in Baldur's Gate 3. I'm actually kind of excited to see what kind of multi builds people are going to put through. Multi-class.
Oh, wait. They're allowing multi-class? I missed that. I didn't realize they were allowing multi-class. Oh, that is fascinating. There's some broken things that you can combine for sure. Oh, well, I guess maybe we should start a BG3 podcast and discuss further how multi-class is pretty broken, can be broken. That'd be an interesting topic to discuss. But I think we've covered enough for this week. Unless you have anything else, I can go ahead and sign us off.
No, you do your thing, bro. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. And Tortuga will take it from here.
Yeah, like Pixel said, thank you all for hanging out with us yet another week. Definitely check out our links in the description below. Check out our links to other content that we have out there. You can always reach out to us on Twitter at @2guys1level. Let us know what you thought of this episode, any previous episodes, and what you would like for us to talk about in any future episodes. Again, thank you all for hanging out with us, and we will catch you all next time. Till then.